You take your Bibles and please open up to Proverbs chapter 22. Proverbs chapter 22. We're going to read verse 6 of Proverbs 22. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart. This is probably the most well-known verse on parenting in the Bible. I think certainly the most well-known verse on parenting in the book of Proverbs. And yet I think one commentator was right when he said that this proverb has brought encouragement, hope, anxiety, and guilt to countless parents who have faced the uncertainty and confusion of childbearing. And part of the reason is because there's a lot of debate about exactly what this proverb means. So in some ways this evening, we're going to do something different from what we normally do here on Wednesday nights. We're going to do a little bit more of a Bible study kind of approach. We're going to try to think about what this proverb means and consider six possible ways of understanding this proverb. And in order to do this, we have to do what we would normally do whenever we're trying to figure out what something in the Bible means. We're going to focus on specific words and phrases, what they mean, how they're used, how they're connected to each other. And then we're going to consider how that potential meaning fits within the context of the book. And then we're also going to consider how that meaning fits within the context of Scripture as a whole. And so we're going to evaluate these different views in that way. And to begin with, I want to make sure we begin with some of these words and phrases. And so we'll begin with the very first word of chapter 6, train up. That word is used four other times in the Old Testament, the word for train up there. And I'm going to read these other times. There's actually only three verses. It's used twice in one verse. It's used twice in Deuteronomy 20 and verse 5. See if you can figure out where it's being used here. The officers also shall speak to the people, saying, who is the man that has built the new house but has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, otherwise he might die in the battle and another man would dedicate it. And the word that's used there is the word dedicate. And so the word for train up here, that's translated train up in Proverbs, is translated dedicate in Deuteronomy 25. It's also used in 1 Kings 8, verse 63. And Solomon offered for the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered to the Lord, 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the sons of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. A very similar verse in 2 Chronicles 7, 5. King Solomon offered a sacrifice of 22,000 oxen, 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the people dedicated the house of God. So every other time it's used in the Old Testament, the NASB translates it, dedicate. And here, it's translated, train up. Why? Well, there's a couple reasons. One is potentially, there is a related word, an adjective. This is a verb. There's an adjective form of the verb used in Genesis 14:14. I'll read that passage to you. And you should be able to pick it out. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, numbering 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And so there it is translated, trained, in the NASB. But I think probably there, similar to the other instances, it could easily be the idea of initiated. That dedicate, certainly when you think about the temple, you might think it's some kind of special ceremony. And so in Deuteronomy 20, when it says, if you haven't dedicated your house yet, go home, you might think it's like throw some kind of party, or like break the bottle of wine on the side of the boat to dedicate your ship. That's what it means to dedicate. But I think more readily it means begin to use. Inaugurate, or initiate. And I think that's probably an understanding that would make sense in Genesis 14:14. As he's leading out these men, he's not leading out men who've never faced battle before. He's leading out men who have already been initiated in this. They've already begun to serve as people who could fight. And so I think the best way to understand the verb that's translated train up is the idea of initiate or inaugurate. Begin to set in a certain way. And the very next word is a child. And there's a lot of debate about what that means. And the word is used in a very broad way. It's used to talk about a child who's not born yet in Judges 13. One who was just born in 1 Samuel 4. An infant who had not yet been weaned from his mother in 1 Samuel 1. A 3-month-old baby in Exodus 2. Joseph at 17 is called a child. And at 30 years old, he's also called a child. And so that's why sometimes the word is translated youth. And so some take this to be actually young men. Others take it to be a child. I think largely the way the book of Proverbs uses it, it does include anyone from the time in which they can begin to be disciplined and instructed and trained in the Lord all the way until they have moved into adulthood. And so that doesn't necessarily narrow down what's being said here in this passage. But the emphasis in Proverbs does tend to be on the child's, the fact that the child still needs discipline and instruction, if I can put it that way. So I'll read a couple of passages. In the very beginning of the book, chapter 1 and verse 4, talking about who this book is for, it says, "This is to give prudence to the naive, to the youth," the same word, the youth, "knowledge and discretion." And so we see a connection between the naive or the simple one. If you remember who's listening to the book of Proverbs, this is the person who's not yet committed himself to wisdom. So there's a connection between the naive and the youth. You're in 22, look at verse 15. "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child." Same word. "The rod of discipline will remove it far from him." And I'll read to you 29 and verse 15. "The rod and the rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." And so here we see in Proverbs, this word is used of someone who is young and still needs instruction, still needs discipline, has not yet grasped onto the path of wisdom. And so you initiate this one who has not yet grasped onto the path of wisdom. And then you have the word in verse 6, in. And you might have a note in the NASB, you'll see according to, as kind of the side. And the reason I want to bring this up is some people have said that this is actually talking about something related to a person's mouth. That's because in Hebrew it's literally according to his mouth. It is basically what it's saying. It's on the mouth of is actually the way you would translate it. But that's a phrase. In some ways that we use phrases sometimes that don't literally mean what they mean. On the mouth of basically means according to the standard of, according to the measure. And so that's why it would be something like in accordance with. And then the final word or phrase I want to focus on is probably the most debated and discussed as to what specifically it means. And that's the phrase at the end of the first part, in the way he should go. Or again, if you have the NASB, you might see a note according to his way, because that's literally all it says, his way. And some have said his way would be God's way. So initiate a child in accordance with God's way. The problem with that is whenever you have a his, it's usually pointing back to someone else that's just been mentioned. Is God mentioned in this verse? No. So what's most naturally his way? It's the child's way. And so we're told here, initiate a child in accordance with his way. So that's what the words mean. What's the way to understand what's being said here? And now we get into the six possible views I want to consider this morning. Not this morning, this evening. And I'll say right away, I'm going to start with the ones I don't think best match up with what the passage is saying. And the first is that this verse is saying, teach children in age-appropriate ways. And so basically, train a child in a manner befitting a child, according to his way. And so if he's a toddler, do it as he's a toddler. If he's older, do it as he's older. If he's a teenager, do it as he's a teenager. Do it in age-appropriate ways. And that would be what this what some people would interpret this passage as saying. I think there are a couple of issues with that understanding. The first is it takes the word we said most likely means initiate as the idea of actually like doing a lot of teaching and education. I think it's latching on to the English idea of train instead of actually what the Hebrew seems to point to as initiate or inaugurate. Because if you say initiate a child in age-appropriate ways, it doesn't quite make as much sense. But the second thing is we have to wonder how the next part of the verse fits in with that. So, train up a child in age-appropriate ways. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. What does that mean? He won't depart from age-appropriate ways? So it's kind of hard to understand exactly what that verse is meaning if we're saying this means teach your child in age-appropriate ways. A second view that people have argued for, and this is one for what it's worth that Chuck Swindoll argued for, and that's saying, according to his way, would be in line with the child's personal aptitude and abilities. And so, if you have different children, you can look at the way that your children interact, their kind of personalities, and you know they're not all the same. Just talking to someone recently who has both boys and girls and was talking about our kids and said, you know, I kind of thought maybe if you have all boys it'd be the same, but obviously it's not. Each boy is a little bit different from the other ones. And so this would say, well, train up a child in ways that match up with that child's personal aptitude and abilities. Make sure you're putting them on a path that matches up with who they are. Some problems with this view. One, often they take that word train up. I mentioned how the Old Testament uses it. They actually go to a similar word in a different language that has the idea of creating a taste for something. It actually has the idea of rubbing a date in the palate of a child's mouth to give him a taste, to help develop that taste for dates. And sometimes because they tied in with what I said, in is on the mouth of, they'll say, well, initiate him or train him up on the mouth, kind of give him a taste for the right way to go. But when you're trying to understand what a word means, you don't go to what it meant later on in a different language. You start with what it meant in the actual language and how it's used in the Old Testament. And so that's actually a bad way to understand how language works. Secondly, they also argue that his way is really the idea of his bent, the way he's inclined. Because that's the idea of aptitude, right? His way would mean his personal bent. And there is some case to be made that the word may come from a word that means bent. But again, a bad way to understand what a word means is to say, what did it mean in the past? The question is, what did it mean when it was used? And way in the Old Testament never means bend. It's not a person's bend. Way is path, life, the path on which he walks. And certainly as you look through the book of Proverbs, if you've been with us in our study, you've seen this over and over again. We've said several times, what does Proverbs lay out? Two paths. There's the path of folly, and there's the path of wisdom. There's not an individual bend that comes into play here. So that would make sense in the book of Proverbs to understand that in this particular passage. So a third view. And this is one that has had very strong arguments for and is popular in some ways. This is the view that says initiate a young man into adulthood. That's what Proverbs 22:6 is talking about. And it rightly says train up has the idea of initiate. And it's pointing to what we see in Proverbs, that it does seem in some ways to be written to children who are preparing to move into adulthood. Certainly some of the instruction we've seen doesn't make sense to tell a six-year-old. For example, in the early chapters of the book, there are several warnings about the foreign woman, the strange woman, the out-of-bounds woman. And that's not the kind of thing you would talk to a six-year-old about. That is the kind of thing you would talk to someone who's transitioning into adulthood. And so they would say that this verse is saying, initiate a child into adulthood. I think one of the problems with this understanding is it doesn't really seem to, I think, do a good job of understanding his way. What does it mean to initiate this child into his way? It seems to assume his way means adulthood. But I don't think, again, that's not how Proverbs uses the word way. As well, it's a little hard to figure out, again, how the second part matches up. Initiate him into an adulthood, and when he grows old, he won't depart from it. Like he won't stop being an adult. What exactly is going on here? What's being said in the second part of this verse? And so, while I think there are wise, godly men who make that case, I don't think that's the best way to understand Proverbs 22:6. Which leads us then to view number four. And view number four might be the one most commonly understood among Christians. And this is a promise. This is God's promise to godly parents that if they do what he says, their children will either continue on it or eventually come back to God because they've set them on the right path. And so this understanding, in some ways, it kind of matches up with what we might read in the NASB or in a lot of your translations. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. And so the way he should go, God's path for him, train him up in that way. And even when he's old, he won't depart from it. He will stay true to what God has said. What should we think about this understanding? I think the first problem is it often, as it's understood, misses out on a key part of the verse. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. He will not depart from it means what? Not, there's a time in which he might go away, but eventually come back. Because what would that be? That would be departing from it, right? And so this verse certainly isn't a promise that says, if you are faithful as a parent, even if your child, for a time goes away, he will come back. That's not what this verse says. But further, this ignores the whole context of the book. If you were here when we first started off, I mentioned that a proverb is different from a promise. Because a proverb is a short, pithy statement of general truth. And it doesn't give all the exceptions. It doesn't say all these kinds of things. It doesn't have the footnote or the disclaimer at the end that says, except for in these situations, except for in this kind of setting. And so this is not a promise. This is a general statement of truth. And in fact, we know it's not a promise because we can see from the rest of Scripture that even the best of parents can have children who do not walk with the Lord. And how do we know that? Well, go to Isaiah chapter 1. Keep your finger. We'll come back to Proverbs 22. But go to Isaiah chapter 1. We're going to start reading in verse 2. Isaiah 1, verse 2. Listen, O heavens, and hear, O earth, for the Lord speaks. Sons, I have reared and brought up. Who's saying that? Yahweh's, right? Yahweh is saying, I have raised sons. I've reared sons. I have brought them up. But they have revolted against me. An ox knows its owner, a donkey its master's manger, but Israel does not know. My people do not understand. Alas, sinful nation, people weighed down with iniquity, offspring of evildoers, sons who act corruptly. They have abandoned the Lord. They have despised the Holy One of Israel. They have turned away from Him. They have departed. Is God, was he inadequate as a father? No. And so this proverb isn't saying, if you do a good job of parenting, your child won't turn away from the Lord. We know it can't say that because God did a great job of parenting. The only perfect job of parenting anyone has ever done. And yet His children rebelled against Him. We see a similar idea. I won't have you turn there. But Jeremiah 3, verses 19 and 20. Then I said, how I would set you among my sons and give you a pleasant land, the most beautiful inheritance of the nations. And I said, you shall call me my father and not turn away from following me. However, as a woman treacherously leaves her lover, so you have dealt treacherously with me, house of Israel, declares the Lord. And yet, even in the book of Proverbs, we can see other proverbs that point to the fact that it's not the parents who are ultimately responsible for whether or not the child listens to what God says, but the child himself. Go to chapter 10 of Proverbs. Proverbs 10, verse 5. Actually, let's start in verse 1. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. Then jump down to verse 5. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who acts shamefully. Go over to chapter 13, verse 1. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Or go over to 15 and verse 20. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. And so in the book of Proverbs, we've already seen Solomon say, there are some children who rather than listening to their father and their mother, rather than heeding their teaching and their instruction, reject it. And who's responsible for their rejection? They are. Solomon doesn't say, you parents, you failed. He says, no, it's a foolish son. Because a wise son should have heeded what his father and mother had said. But a foolish son rejected it. So Proverbs 22:6 is not a promise that says, parents, if you do what you're supposed to do, your child will be exactly what they should be. So what is it? Well, we're down to two views. In these last two views, I'm going to say right up front, I really struggle in deciding which one I think is right. But I'm not too concerned about it. Because as we walk through them, I think we'll see in the end, they're more or less saying the same thing. So we'll begin with our fifth view, and that's the view that this is actually not a promise. It's a threat. It's a warning. Go back to 22 and verse 6. This understanding says, his way is actually the way the child chooses. So initiate a child in his way. The way he would choose. The path he would want for himself. And we already looked at this, but if you look down at verse 15 of the same chapter, what does it say about the child? Well, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. So you set a child on his path, and even when he's old, he won't depart from it. Then in a sense, Getting older will not make him wise. That you have allowed him to go his way. In fact, you have set him on the path of his way. And that means you have set him on a path of destruction. In a sense, if this is what this verse is saying, this would be a warning against permissive parenting. That those who say, your child knows what's best, listen to your child. Help your child to follow his own heart and his own desires. And this would be a proverb that says, you do that, you've set him on a path that's going to lead to destruction. In a sense, this would be an almost sarcastic or ironic kind of statement or command. Somewhat similar to what we see in the prophets sometimes, where God might say, well, go and make your sacrifices to other gods. Go ahead, choose this way. See what happens. And so this would be a warning here. And I think this does make sense of the words. That in many ways, this might be the easiest way to understand what his way means. His way is the child's way, and it's not a good way. And it certainly fits with the rest of Proverbs. If we understand it as an ironic command, or as a warning or a threat. Because it says over and over again, don't allow the child to go his own way. Instead, call him towards God. Instead, teach him God's ways. It's your job as a parent not to simply say, what would you want? But to say, no, I don't care what you want. God didn't just set you here to follow your own path. God gave you a mother. God gave you a father so that you wouldn't go your own way. But that instead, you would be taught God's way. And from the very beginning, I'm pushing back against the child's desire to go his own way. But instead, calling him to go God's way. Now, I said I struggle with which one to understand. And the tensions I have with this view are two minor tensions. The first is the phrase, even when he is old. This understanding would basically say, even if he were to get old, he would not depart from it. I'm inclined to think a better way to understand it is what you see translated here, even when he is old. And the problem is, in the book of Proverbs, who are the people who reach old age? It's the righteous. It's the godly. And so the fool is cut off early. And so I think there's a little bit of a tension with that. The second, and this is minor, but I think it's at least something we wrestle with as we're trying to understand what the book of Proverbs says. Very few people have ever argued for this view. Which doesn't mean it's wrong, but it does mean we've got to be very careful. If we think we understand a passage and not many other people have ever understood it that way, we want to be cautious at least. So I think the best way to understand it is probably the reverse of that. But in some ways, you're understanding it similar to what the understanding of a promise, except for you're recognizing it's not a promise. It's a proverb. It's a proverb that says, your job as a parent is to set the child on the way that God has laid out for him. The way of wisdom. God made this child. God wants this child to walk in wisdom, to obey his commands, to serve his creator and his Lord. And you as a parent want to initiate him on that path, to start him off on that way. And generally speaking, if you do that, he will follow that path. If you're directing him as much as you can, trying to shepherd his heart to love and honor God and to obey his word, then your child will go that way. And is that true? I think generally it is true. Are there exceptions? Yes, that's the whole point. It's not a promise. There are exceptions. But there are exceptions, right? That if you think about most of the parents that you know, who, as far as you know, are seeking to honor the Lord and are seeking to bring up their children in the instruction and discipline of Christ. Are the majority of their children walking with the Lord as they grow older? I think so. And I think there is a biblical principle that parents do have an incredible responsibility and influence on what happens to their children. That's why in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1, as you talk about men who are qualified to be pastors or elders, it talks about how they deal with their children. Now, we don't have time to get all the ins and outs of this. In Titus 1, there's a phrase that some have translated, children who are believers. And seems to be saying that if a pastor does not have children who are believers, or if a man doesn't have children who are believers, he's not qualified to be a pastor. I'm actually convinced that's not the best way to understand that verse. Dr. Miller, who teaches at our seminary, has done a great job of actually looking at that phrase and how it's used throughout the New Testament. And then he makes a very compelling argument. That better way to understand is not children who are believers, but children who are faithful. Children who are not riotous. Children who are not rebellious. Children who are not acting out in crazy ways. And in a sense, it's why God judges Eli with his sons, who he accused of not restraining his sons, not holding them in. And so parents are in some ways responsible for what happens to their children if they did not do what they were supposed to do. And this proverb would remind us of that. And in many ways, this is the opposite of the warning view, right? If the threat is, hey, let your child go his own way, and when he's old, he'll stay on that path. What would the opposite be? Well, don't let him go his own way. Instead, encourage him to go God's way. If the proverb is saying, hey, initiate your child on the path of God's way, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. What's the opposite of that? Well, don't do that, and what's going to happen? He's going to go down the path of folly. And I didn't mention this, but if it is a warning or a threat, is it a guarantee? Are there parents who have allowed their child to go his own way? And when the child gets older, God does a work of grace in that child's life and brings him from the path of folly to the path of wisdom? Yeah. Just like those who have tried to help their children go the right path, see children who go astray. So this is a passage that is not a promise for us. It's not a guarantee. But it is a healthy and needed reminder that as parents, we have an incredible influence on our children's lives. And therefore, we have an incredible responsibility to help set them on the right path, to not set them on the wrong path. If I could just close with two words of admonition for us. The first is that I think it would be largely unhealthy to look at a passage like this and to go to parents who have seen their children walk away and say, well, maybe you should have done something a little different. Might it be true that they should have done something different? It's possible, right? But it's also very possible that they shouldn't have done anything different. But even if they should have done something different, what good does that help? What value is that? If you think, I need to talk to a parent because I think they're allowing their child to go on the path of folly rather than encouraging the child on the path of wisdom, do that when there's still hope that the parent might be able to encourage them from the path of folly to the path of wisdom. Certainly do it in a humble way. Certainly do it in a gracious way. But the only reason you should ever talk to a parent about that is if you think it's possible that the parent might be able to still help the child instead of the parent's already lost the child. But then if I could encourage all of us, including those who have seen children who have not followed the path of wisdom, that first we would be encouraged that their position in life is not ultimately in our hands. It's in their hands and in the Lord's hands. They're responsible for the choices they've made. They've done so under God's providential guidance in this world. And what we as parents need to do is not necessarily say, what kind of result do I want to see in my child? That's how I will evaluate my parenting. There's some value and wisdom in that. But ultimately, I've got to think, have I been faithful in doing what God has called me to do? Not did my child turn out the way I want him to. And that's hard. Because there's few things that break our heart more than if our child does not walk with the Lord. And yet, what matters more to us than whether or not our children walk with the Lord is whether or not we have glorified God with our life. So if your son or your daughter is not walking with Christ, in many ways, we weep with you. But can I encourage you not to become so focused on them that you lose sight of the one who matters more? That ultimately you stand before the Lord, He's not going to say, where'd your child end up? Say, what did you do? And the answer, don't think the answer is, did I make mistakes? Because the answer is always going to be, yes, a lot of them. It's not, was I perfect as a parent? But was I, as much as I could with God's grace, was I faithful? Did I try to do what God had called me to do? And if so, take comfort in the fact that God would look at what you have done and say, well done. And that you can trust the judge of all the earth to do what is right with your child.